Blog Talk Radio.
Coming in there strong with the intro from Outkast. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Foul Territory here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Ace Abiel, and my co-host, Travis Jones, is right here with me. What's going on, Travis?
Not too much. Happy to be here on Blog Talk Radio yet another Wednesday talking some Foul Territory. I've been in a deprivation tank all day doing nothing but analyzing some sports. So I'm very excited about tonight's show.
Me too. I have been knee-deep in sports, steeped in sports, marinated in them. Mm. And now I'm ready to roast myself. Listening delight. As you know, if you haven't been living under a large, large rock, the World Series has started. The San Francisco Giants have made it to the World Series. Besting the St. Louis Cardinals, even though they were down 3-1 in the series, something their franchise had never before accomplished. Now they face the Detroit Tigers, who skunked the Yankees. You have two very contrasting styles, two classic franchises, two teams with a lot of history. Really fun series, and Game 1 is just underway tonight.
Yeah, Game 1 is just underway tonight, and you're right. I mean, just the way that the Giants came back, excuse me, especially against a team like the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cardinals known for just being deadly in the playoffs, especially the last few years. And when you're down 3-1, you win in St. Louis, and then you go home and win by a combined score of 15-1. That's some momentum. And I think that one thing everyone was interested to see going into tonight was, you know, Detroit was a team that swept the Yankees, totally dominated that series. But they've been sitting around for a while. Meanwhile, the Cardinals are coming off of that emotional 7-game tilt. I saw today that 3 times before in history has this matchup occurred, a team that swept versus a team that went to 7 games in the previous series. And the team that went to 7 games is 3-0. So I guess we'll see if that trend continues in this World Series. So, yeah, that's something that – Asa, you there? Well, I guess I'll break it down by myself, but that's one thing that I personally was very excited about going into this game. And, you know, you look at the pitching matchup and you really expected the Tigers to come out strong here to really, you know, riding Verlander, who in these playoffs has just been absolutely nuts. He's been going ridiculous. And then you face him against a guy like Barry Zito, who, you know, he's been very good in these playoffs. He's been very effective. But he's a guy who's largely been considered a bust coming off of that big contract. You know, he's also a guy that was left off the postseason roster last year. That was something that Bruce Bochy said, you know, was a very difficult decision to have to sit him down. So, you know, and right now, as we sit here in the fourth inning, San Francisco's up 1-0. So if they could steal this game away, if they could win this game against Justin Verlander, that would be huge for them. Asa, do we have you back, buddy? I will keep driving this train. Let it be known, foul territory will not be stopped. Hello? All right, so talking a little bit about Justin Verlander, talking a little bit about Barry Zito. Ace, are you there? In these playoffs. Give me a second. We're having some technical issues. I'm going to try to get Ace Abiel back on the line here. He is the heart and the soul. So we need to get him on here. Why don't you guys sit here, get pumped up with some Soulja Boy. How's it going, sir?
Oh, man. Another round of technical difficulties. We just bust our butts getting the show ready for you guys on every Wednesday, and we appreciate you coming on to listen. And then the guys in IT, boy, are they a bunch of snakes. Time and again, spilling coffee all over servers and keyboards, throwing off our goddamn connection. But we're back.
We are back. Back with a passion.
Sorry about that.
It's no big deal, dude. I'm sure that people are upset, but let's make it right. Let's make it right with some good old-fashioned breakdowns. One thing that I was talking about when we were waiting for you here on the other side was how, you know, expectations coming into this game. The Tigers are starting Justin Verlander, who, of course, MVP and Cy Young Award winner last year, has just been absolutely money in these playoffs. Pitted against a guy like Barry Zito, who, you know, although he's had a good playoffs this year, last year was left off of the postseason roster. Bruce Bochy said that that was a tough decision. And, you know, you look down now and the Giants have a 1-0 lead. It would be huge for them to get this game won.
Yeah, it really would. And that first inning, I looked away from my intensive preparation for the show for just a second, and it was just in time to see Pablo Sandoval come to the plate. Verlander gets him down 0-2 and then thinks he can sneak a fastball by Pablo up and in. And it was at a place most hitters wouldn't even swing, much less make contact. Sandoval squares it up, hit it out to dead center field. And I think probably took Mr. Verlander a little bit by surprise, but that's the beauty of the World Series. Now we have interleague play, so you know a lot more about your opponents than you did. But back in the day, this was the only time you played these teams. You know it's going to be two great teams matching up. Plus, you have the heightened sense of the moment, as well as the fact that they haven't matched up very much. You know, even with interleague play, there's a chance they didn't match up this year or in years past very much. And Zito coming in, like you said, off that great performance when their backs are against the wall in Game 5 of the championship series and blank Cardinals over, I think, about 7.2 innings, almost 8 innings, only allowed 7 base runners, no runs scored, and that game combined with a couple more incredible pitching performances by Vogelsong and then by Matt Cain finally riding the ship in the playoffs is what put these Giants in. And one thing we talk about a lot is momentum. And the Tigers were more than happy to put away the Yankees in 4 games. Flip side of that is that you then have, while the other series resolves itself and the other series go the distance, meaning the Tigers waited around for an extra long time, we all know kind of the traditional exit come with that situation. You might be a little rusty. And is offset by the fact that they're pitching. So you know, whose favorite do you think that this year with these two specific teams?
Well, I'll say it again for the listeners that are just joining us. There's been this matchup three times before in the Major League Baseball history of the World Series, where a team that has swept and only played four games is going against a team that went down to the wire, played those seven games, and ended up coming out victorious. And in all three previous circumstances, the team that went seven games had that row momentum, as you like to say. So I think that, you look at individual matchups, and we can break down, you know, what the strengths of each team are. But I think the momentum of the Giants, I mean, to be riding this emotional high, to be feeling that good about yourselves. And meanwhile, the Tigers had to sit around and think they were playing the Cardinals and watch the Giants have this incredible comeback. I think it's going to be tough to stop the Giants this year.
It certainly is, and even more tough to stop than the Giants. Would have been a catchphrase had the Tigers been coming in on a seven-game swing, because they would have been Motown momentum. Run momentum for Romo. Sorry?
Yeah. I said I like it. It would have been good. Also, I want to say it's well known amongst the people out there.
Would have been great. And speaking of great...
Speaking of great, what's that? Speaking of great.
Log game. And the Tigers really need that because their bullpen's not as good as the Giants. Let's talk about those bullpens. What have you seen out of the Tigers' bullpen this postseason that you maybe didn't know about them during the year?
Well, I will say that, I mean, Jose Valverde has been one of the best closers in baseball over the past few years. And, I mean... You know, you look, he's a guy who had 49 saves last year with a 2.24 ERA, no blown saves. This year he has 35 saves with a 3.78. Kind of had a rough stretch at the end of the year, but he has just completely imploded in these playoffs. And, you know, you really look for a guy to be able to shut people down in a pressure situation, and that's something that Jose Valverde has been able to do. And you wondered who they were going to turn to. You know, it looks like it's been different guys, but Phil Koch is someone who stepped up against the Yankees and closed out some games for them, did a pretty good job.
Yeah, Phil Koch's got some talent for Yankee shutting down that team. I think they do have some talent at the back end, but I like the Giants' bullpen. I like what Bruce Bochy does. Me and you talked about this before. It feels like he overmanages. Even in the regular season, you will see him just be so picky and so nitpicky with reliever choices and how long he leaves guys in. It makes sense in the playoffs, but, you know, it seems to have worked. He has a lot of talent in the back end of that bullpen, a lot of firepower. No clear-cut closer this year. Castillo was back there for a while. Romo appears to be the guy.
Romo, another guy with a great beard, has the row momentum, and, he's been one of the more unheralded, bullpen guys in the National League, but he is another bullpen guy that's been really great the past few years. 4-2 with a 1.79 ERA this year, a whip of .85, like, that's just disgusting. And that's up from last year. We needed a .71 whip, which is just ridiculous, and that was in, 65 games last year, 69 games this year. And if you look at the innings pitched, he pitched in 65 games last year, only 48 innings. 69 games this year, only 55 innings. So you can see sometimes, you know, Bruce Bochy is using him as a specialist, bringing him in for just one or two guys, you know, maybe just a few pitches, just wanting to see if he can get those matchups. Crank a Lincoln, as we like to say. Nate, you back, buddy? certainly sounds like he is.
We do. And one other. Sorry?
Oh, no, go for it. I was just breaking down the Giants bullpen a little bit.
One other thing I wanted to talk. Oh, yeah, yeah. One other thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, it's been a year in which we saw a lot of established powers fall off the map. We saw Boston and Philadelphia really hit rock bottom, although Philly turned it around at the end of the year. In a tough, you know, we saw a ton of money. We saw the Angels spend a ton of money before the year and then really not make a reasonable run at the playoffs whatsoever. You know, and so it's a year you think maybe the small market teams are making Cardinals look like they were going to make a run, Washington making moves, Oakland tomorrow were really smaller markets. But as it turns out, the big money still means big playoff success. It still buys you that, as we have Detroit and San Francisco, and they are two of the tops.
Yeah, Detroit and San Francisco are two of those, you know, they're not the biggest market
money
in America, you know, necessarily. But
the depth for this long. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think certainly that, you know, Detroit and San Francisco, you know, maybe are two, you know, cities that you don't think of being, you know, the biggest markets necessarily in the United States. But at the same time, Detroit, $133 million, San Francisco Giant, $132 million. Those are some pretty, those are some pretty hefty payrolls. And, I mean, yeah, they're not as publicized as the New Yorks or the Boston or the LA Angels, but they're, you know, cities that are very invested in their franchises, and they're getting their ROI. You know, they're getting the postseason money, they're getting the World Series money, and when you have that success and you have people show up to games and spend money on food and concessions and jerseys and all that kind of stuff, you know, you're going to be able to bump that salary up a little bit. So, you know, it is kind of, you know, we keep talking about momentum. That's another momentum type of thing. The San Francisco Giants slowly spending more and more every year, you know, because all of a sudden they're the franchise on Showtime. You know, they're the World Series champs. They're the sexy team. And so that can afford you certainly, you know, quite a bit of leeway. In some more off-season news, speaking of a team that spent a lot of money, Ozzie Guillen is out at the Miami Marlins. You know, this was an interesting decision from the get-go. You have management, which has been known to clash with front office in the past because Jeffrey Loria, very hard to please. It's a very weird situation down there with, you know, the way that the stadium went down and the way that they threw a whole bunch of money out there. And then everything just kind of crumbled in front of them. You know, you thought that maybe they had some kind of commitment to the team, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're shipping off Hanley Ramirez in the middle of the season. So Florida having some issues, and Ozzie Guillen, who, you know, everyone was excited, he was one of the big headlines, started off in hot water with the Fidel Castro comments, and really never recovered because the Marlins never won. I mean, I think they made one short run at the beginning of the year, and ever since then, they were never able to recover, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, if you're trying to cap it.
He really put himself.
But there have been rumors that possibly Mike Redman, who is a retired MLB catcher, not unlike Ozzie Guillen, Or is Ozzie an infielder? It's escaping me at the moment. But regardless, Mike Redman is thought to be the candidate there. But you got to think, candidates thinking about the Marlins at this point are going to have to wonder how good of a situation it is. They've had a ridiculous amount of managers in the past 5 or so years, just shuffling them in and out more possibly than, you know, one a year. Freddy Gonzalez, who, you know, found his way as the Braves manager this year after, you know, having a solid season and then collapsing at the end of the year last year. So, you know, it's something you definitely got to think about. You got to wonder if, you know, if you're getting your first shot at management, if that's going to be a place that you want to go, because you certainly want to think that you're set up for success. And
Brad Ausmus is a guy. Brad Ausmus is a guy. You there, Travis?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello?
Hey.
Oh, Brad Ausmus. Hey. Hey. Brad Ausmus is a guy who he's retiring and is a guy has retired and is really sought after, and he's a guy who might not want to go for that Marlins job, might want to hold out for a better job, and looking to the future and maybe a better situation, a team who's more serious about winning and just more based. That's a tough.
Yeah, well, what about John Farrell going from the Jays to the Red Sox, going from the fourth place team in the AL East to the Red Sox? And this is kind of a weird move because they actually made a trade for him.
Yeah, well, Cubs even got compensation for Theo Epstein. And Farrell's a guy the Red Sox have had their eye on for a while. The weird part to me is if you're the Jays, he's a good manager. Why do you just want to give him up to one of your division competitors, one of your rivals in theory, your Canadians? I don't know if you're allowed to have rivals. Just kidding. But why do you just want to give up Farrell to the Sox? You know, they're a team who's been around for years. You know, their team has had a lot of success the last years. They have their payroll. They're the media darling. You know, why do you want to give up your guy? Take a stand that you have a lot of talent. If you can put some signings together, compete in that division. The O's show that it's possible. It feels like a weird move to me unless they got the sweet prospect in return.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a pretty confounding move, and definitely not as much talent exchange as the John Gruden move. I know it's a different
spot. But,
kind of a yeah. Flow.
Say that again.
Well, nothing. Let's move on to actually a trade that went down. Chris Young, a guy that's always had a lot of talent, can hit for some pop. We thought that one of the Arizona outfielders might leave, whether it be Justin Upton or Chris Young. Chris Young has now made his way to the Oakland Athletics.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise to me, especially considering the Athletics situation. They have a lot of talent in the outfield. They have Cespedes on contract for 3 more years. Josh Reddick is a young guy on team control. And Coco Crisp is still there. So you wonder if Coco Crisp is out, or I've heard a lot of people out in the Bay Area here hypothesize that really unhappy with the defense Cespedes. Even though he brings that athleticism, he was surprisingly not good in the field. So maybe you just want to get him some DH at bats.
Yeah, that is interesting to think about. And, you know, the A's are pretty wily in terms of making moves, and I feel like, you know, this is a guy that, you know, maybe going to an American League team, you know, he had a good rookie season, and there's potential to build on that, so he would be a good piece going forward. But I think they're definitely happy that they were able to kind of steal Josh Reddick from the Red Sox after the year that he had for them. He was great for them this year.
Over in Arizona, looks like they're going to put Parra in center field, Gerardo Parra. Actually, that's not right. They're going to have some prospects. I believe Adam Eaton is going to get a crack at that center field spot. So Gerardo Parra will still be that fourth outfielder. But it seems like that means they're holding on to Justin Upton unless they get an offer they can't refuse.
That's not the same Adam Eaton they used to pitch, right? There's no way that's the same guy.
No.
I wonder if they're related. Situation.
That would be an incredible turnaround, an ancient Rick Ankiel conversion, and one of which the opposite version I hope we'll see out of Ichiro. Maybe when he hits free agency, he'll declare himself as a left-handed reliever. We can only hope. To the Diamondbacks, because the A's have the Diamondbacks' old shortstop, Stephen Drew in place, although he has an expensive option. Maybe they'll try to extend him. And ostensibly, Cliff Pennington is the starting shortstop of the D-backs, which kind of a not very much bat, mostly glove guy, but, you know, a good guy to have short, I guess. If you need short, but defense.
He's solid with the glove, and he can play more than one position. You can pop him in at second base, but, you're looking at a guy that hit 215 this year. It was definitely down from hitting 264 in 2011 with Oakland, but, I don't know. You trade away a lot of Pop and Chris Young, and you have Cliff Pennington at short. But there are some bright spots on this team. But they will have to rely on some bounce-back years and some talent, even though they do have the lightning rod that is Jason Kubel in left field. Asa, since we... I was going to say, since we skipped it earlier, do you want to go to some tweet child of mine, or did you have more to say on the Arizona Diamondbacks?
Let's do it.
One of our most popular segments here on
Make It Happen,
Corey, on blogtalkradio.com.
1, 2, 3, 4. She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories. Where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest sky, as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes and see
it. Nice vibrato, buddy. All right, Alice, let's go.
Alice snuck in there at the end. Not a fan of Alice. I'll bring you the first tweet. How about that? This is a double tweet, and by that I mean that there are two people because someone retweeted someone else. See if you can follow. Drake tweeted, dropped my phone in a glass of wine just to give you an idea where my life is at these days. And Rob Delaney retweeted him and said, buy 1,000 new ones. And that makes me happy because fuck Drake.
Oh, fucking Drake. How dare you? Well, I have a couple tonight because why not? I have one from Paul Scheer, who plays Andre on the lead. And we have a Dre ourselves. I hope he doesn't think of himself as our Dre, but he is called Dre, so I don't know. Paul Scheer said, it must be so disappointing to parents when they realize their child will never have their own reality TV show. So there's that. Some astute observations from Mr. Scheer. I have another one from sports blogger Can't Stop the Bleeding, and he said, Adam Dunn wins AL Comeback Player of the Year Award. Imagine if he'd hit higher than 204, Dunn would have won the Nobel Peace Prize.
That is pretty crazy, someone hit 204 and win an award for their bat, because it's certainly not for the D. If you guys haven't been paying attention to the World Series, big things are popping. San Francisco now up 4-0. There was a Marco Scudero single that knocked in Angel Pagan. Then Pablo Sandoval, nothing has better hand-eye coordination than a Kung Fu Panda, had another home run. This one was a two-run shot, and Marco Scudero scores. Detroit now behind the eight ball, down 4-0.
Wow. You know what? It feels like Sergio Romo momentum right now.
Yeah, it certainly does.
Those Giants bats, which were such a weakness for the first two-thirds of the season, and really...
Hello?
On Blog Talk Radio.
I'm back.
Do you know what I'm saying? Back?
I'm back, baby.
Back. You're back, baby. I'm back, baby. Well, let's get to some football. Let's talk some football. We know all about the Giants. They're going to roll right through those American League.
Hold on,
straight up pimp. If you want me, you can find me in the air.
It's just the way it goes. I be on that shit that I had you on that I don't want no more. At this time, I need all my freak show to get down on the floor. If you came to rep your set, write that partner, let them know. If it's jail, like it was time for the head of this.
And I'm joined by Foul Territory's own NFL analyst here on Blog Talk Radio. Carson Phillips Spots here to break down the NFL week ahead. Carson, how you feeling?
I'm feeling great, man. Better now that I'm on air with you two lovely gents. Definitely an awesome week in football, as per usual. And looking for a big week coming up this week. Asa, how you doing, man? I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I assume he's doing fantastic. He'll join us here in a minute. We're right now going to do as we do every week and break down the Thursday night matchup. This week, not particularly a sexy game, but you know what? Once you get to know it, I bet it's cute. Tampa Bay, Minnesota. At Minnesota, and Minnesota is a 6.5-point favorite in this one. Carson, Minnesota has been an incredibly surprising team this year. You know, we picked the NFC North, and just about no one gave the Vikings a shot. How have they been able to get it done and get to 5-2 at this point in the season?
Well, you know, looking at the NFL and how it works today, especially on the offensive side of the ball, a lot of teams, you know, certain NFL analysts talk about the need to heavily rely on the pass. You know, some say, you know, abandon the running game, you know, altogether. This Minnesota team is definitely a throwback to teams in the golden age of football, I'd say, that concentrate on playing good, sound defense, running the football, and protecting the ball and not turning it over and making mistakes. You know, there's a good segment on NFL Live last week. They talked about how this approach, when you have a running game in AP, it's definitely formidable. It can slow the game down. So the need to put up tons of points, you know, isn't available. Christian Ponder, you know, an early pick, first-round pick, turned into a game manager, and the defense has been pretty stout this year. So I'm excited for the matchup. I think that, you know, the Vikings should take this one pretty easily. I'm not a fan of Tampa Bay at all whatsoever. Their antics, the things that they do, you know, under Keanu, just, it doesn't really appeal to me. Freeman had a great game last week, putting over 400 yards passing. Vincent Jackson, definitely a threat. And, you know, Doug Martin's been solid all year on the ground, but I think that Minnesota will control the game on the ground early and come away with it. I'll say the cover spread. I'll say they'll win the game 21-10.
Wow, that's a strong pick. 6.5 points is big.
It is. The Vikings feel to me, the Vikings of this year, a lot like a Falcons team of a couple of years ago. Obviously, Ponder and Ryan, different kinds of quarterbacks. But with that strong running game, this Vikings team probably a little bit better of a defense. But a team that's built to play with a lead. And if they can get out, you're right, they can let Peterson go ham. Toby Gerhardt's a pretty solid backup who can get some carries and take care of the ball as well. And Christian Ponder, so athletic, able to get out on the run. And completing 67% of his passes this year is really incredible, for a second-year quarterback. Obviously, the passing game across the league is exploding, and, passer ratings are up in general. It's still very impressive. My boy Percy Harvin doing work on the end. And, the defense has been solid. I like them to get this done as well.
I want to stop you there. I want to go ahead and give
pretty abysmal.
I want to issue an apology for the comments I made about Percy Harvin. Definitely didn't expect him to have a season he had. He's having so far this year.
I think you listened to Daryl Waltrip got some of that goodies headache powder, and then once the migraines are gone, he's just good to go. Offense and special teams, he's been
he's getting carries. He's catching the ball. Definitely a dynamic guy. He's definitely worth the pick.
Yeah, he is. And I guess you know what?
Yeah, it seems like a good fantasy guy. An even better real-life guy.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, which is awesome. And, I guess, you know what? I guess I got to make a pick in this game, too. Tampa Bay, they're a scrappy bunch, just like Greg Schiano's a scrappy guy. He's going to fight you to the last play. He's going to send his defensive tackles in to slap your fingers when you're trying to hold on to the ball. I think that it's going to be close. I think that they will not cover the spread. I don't think Minnesota's winning this game by 6 or more points. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to come down to the wire. But Tampa Bay just doesn't have a ton of talent. I think Doug Martin isn't as explosive as people thought he would be. Vincent Jackson coming in is great, but they still don't have that great of a defense, and they have a lot of holes on the offensive line and otherwise. And I'm not sure that Josh Freeman is a franchise quarterback, so... Minnesota, great defense this year. They've got it all going. They're at home. It's hard to win on the road in the NFL. I'm also picking Minnesota to win this game. I'd love to be the contrarian again, but that did not work out for me last week as the Seahawks limped away out of that matchup. All right, guys. Good picks.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the National Football Conference because – this Minnesota Vikings team, we can pretty much say, is the surprise of the conference. But what's not a surprise is that across the board, they're just quality teams at the top leading the way. And so let's talk about this in a little bit greater of a sense. Is the NFC playing a little bit of a dynasty on the conference side of things right now? If you remember, Santonio Holmes' crazy catch in the end zone at the end of the Super Bowl against the Cardinals was the only thing standing in the way of the NFC winning the last 5 Super Bowls. It felt like the earlier part of the 2000s was the AFC. Have we seen a wholesale shift?
It's definitely an interesting point, and I know that when you have success in the conference like the Patriots had, when they were on the early run in the early 2000s, Peyton Manning and the things that his Colts teams did, in the later 2000s. I think that, you start to get the ideas of these colossal franchises, teams really you know, establishing themselves and having success over the long term. This year, I think that it's been a resurgent year for the NFC, and I think that has to do with the NFC, you know, improving, you know, through the draft and free agents, and also just the AFC just not being that great of a conference this year. I think that when you look at, you know, coming into last week, there are only two teams in the AFC with winning records. It's not because, you know, they just beat up on themselves. I mean, the Falcons at 6-0 have beat every team in the AFC West. So it's not just like teams in the AFC are beating each other up and, you know, they don't play any out-of-conference games. You know, they've had opportunities to win games out of conference and just haven't got it done. But I just think that the perception of teams, you know, like New England and their dynasty and the Colts, you know, and what they've done, the Ravens, you know, you sort of see these sort of, you know, larger-than-life teams. In reality, it hasn't worked out that way. The Colts have taken them down here this year in the rebuilding phase. And you look at, you know, the New England hasn't been as strong as they have been in the past. And like you said, teams in the NFC, you know, the Vikings, you know, putting wins together. you know, in the whole NFC West, Seattle, you know, finding ways to win games. So I think that it should be, you know, it's great for the parity of the league. But I think we'll see when it comes playoff time, you know, how these teams really stack up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Go ahead, Asa.
Oh, well, I just want to talk, really, just pose one hypothetical for you guys. I'm going to make a crazy out there statement. It's about the AFC. We talked about how deep the NFC is and how a lot of teams you could see making a run for the Super Bowl, getting to the playoffs, getting deep in the playoffs. But let me say a crazy statement about the AFC, and you say if you buy it or if you sell it. The way I see it right now, I feel like there's less than 5% chance that any team besides the Texans, the Ravens, or the Patriots get to the Super Bowl to represent the AFC. I just don't see anyone that's close. I even hesitate to put Baltimore in there because I feel like New England and the Texans are really the two to beat. But it just feels so top heavy. Do you see any way that that's not true?
I will say that I think one team that has a lot of potential going forward is the Denver Broncos. I think as Peyton Manning continues to grow with his receivers, they're going to become more and more dangerous. You've seen in the past few weeks, especially with that ridiculous win against the Chargers last week, I think that they're dangerous. But you're right. Honestly, I mean, you know, the Patriots, you know, they were there last year, and I think that they have an improved defense. They're going to get Aaron Hernandez back. Houston is obviously the best team in the AFC. They're the most, one of the most complete teams in football. Great defense. The loss of Cushing helps, but they have a lot of other pieces. And then you have, you know, great running backs. You have one of the best wide receivers in football, in Andre Johnson. And it remains to be seen what Matt Schaub can do in the playoffs, but they don't necessarily need him to do a whole lot with that running game. So I think that there is a very short list of teams that can compete. And, you know, I guess maybe the Broncos are my only other wild card that are out there at this point. Carson, what about you?
I mean, you make a great point. And not only is it very top heavy, I mean, when you look at teams from the past, you know, there's teams, you know, I think Dave Wansus last year in Miami. You know, they went 10-6 in a AFC East and didn't make the playoffs. And you look at this year, you know, with, you know, the Patriots being above 500, and you have other teams behind them, you know, Miami, the Bills and the Jets all having off years this year. You look at, you know, the battles that went down in the AFC South with the Colts and the Texans, the Titans, you know, back in the day. You know, having great teams and, you know, the chances of not making the playoffs, that just doesn't exist this year. And, you know, like you said, I think that your statement has some value. I mean, it really depends. I think, you know, maybe the Steelers can make a run at the end of the year, but, you know, they're so beat up, so old. That's the only other team I can see. I agree with Travis about the Broncos. If Peyton Manning continues to grow and develop as he has been. One other team to take a look at, but I mean, I think you're right, man. And just in terms of, there's not the parity anymore, you know, that's been a staple of the AFC, you know, as a conference. So, you know, we'll see moving forward, but I think that, you know, your statement definitely has value.
Well, thank you. And one other thing I want to point out, I mentioned Baltimore up there, and a lot of people have really jumped off their ship after injuries to two defensive starters, Ray Lewis, obviously the big one, but also Lardarius Webb, their excellent young cornerback. But another thing I want to point out is that Terrell Suggs is already back. He was supposed to miss way more time than this. An Achilles injury, I mean, that your Achilles is pretty much the hinge that determines whether you can move or not. And he was supposed to miss some serious time. He's already back and playing. So, you know, I wouldn't count them out. I feel like at this point in his career, a healthy Suggs is much more valuable than a healthy Lewis anyway. The loss of Webb hurts, but don't count out the Ravens.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, the dimension that Terrell Suggs brings, especially the fact he's like AP, the fact that either of them are this healthy this quickly is just freak of nature, you know, type of thing. But the fact that they had T. Sizzle come back, and he's not only rushing the passer, but he's dropping back in coverage. He's very versatile. But the fact that he can, you know, rush the passer, put pressure on the quarterback, I think that's huge in today's NFL, to use a cliche. You know, Ray Lewis as a middle linebacker, that's very important, but fewer and fewer teams are running the ball, and the ability to rush the passer is really key. And he looks healthy and good to go, so you know, that's as good as a fantastic midseason trade for the Baltimore Ravens.
It absolutely is. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the NFC, but, you know, everybody feels so strong, and people have beaten up on each other. So, you know, it's hard to tell who has the upper hand. The Falcons are 6-0, but I feel like if you ask people from the national media, not us on the underground and the fringes, you know, I feel like they wouldn't even include the Falcons potentially in their top three most dangerous NFC playoff teams. You know, the Giants have got to get a lot of credit. They just find ways to win games. They've been there before, obviously won last year, a couple years ago as well. And then the Niners, who got beat up by the Giants but are still a scary, scary team, got deep in the playoffs last year. And recently, Aaron Rodgers has been turning it around, and the Packers look almost as scary as a couple of years ago. There's definitely some holes on that team, but they have so much talent. You know, I feel like picking the odds in the NFC of one of these teams to make a run in the playoffs, I mean, obviously you give the advantage to the teams with experience, but it's kind of a toss-up, I feel like.
Yeah, man. You know, you mentioned about the Falcons and their ranking. I mean, I've read some power ranking, you know, articles, and you know, they list the teams in order, you know, from top to bottom, and they usually give descriptions at length as to why they're ranked in a certain place, if they're coming off wins, you know, injuries, certain players that have been outstanding for the team, and you look at most of them for the Falcons, and you see, you know, they're at number one because they're 6-0, because they haven't lost a game yet.
I guarantee you one loss and we're going to drop to about 5 or 6 in about every power rank.
Yeah, you know, one loss you definitely see us out of the top 5, but, you know, don't really give us too much credit for the things that we've been doing, both offensively and defensively. It's just sort of, you know, it's something that has to happen because we're 6-0, we haven't lost a game yet, you know, the last undefeated team in the league. But, I mean, I can definitely tell that, you know, we're being slept on, you know, at the national level.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are a lot of good teams, and I think one of the most consistent things about the good teams in the NFC this year is that there's a lot of good defenses out there. I mean, the Chicago Bears and the New York Giants have shown that they've been dangerous over the past few years. But then the Niners, their comeuppance last year, they had a lot of talent that was able to gel under Jim Harbaugh. The Cardinals and the Rams have been surprise contenders. The Seahawks, the Vikings, a lot of good defenses, and I really think that the Falcons can be included in that group because of what Mike Nolan has been able to do with this group. So, you know, I think it's interesting. Let's talk, as we do every week, about our picks of the week. I, of course, hit the nail on the head with my pick. Carson, I've noticed that you picked a very interesting divisional game that has a lot of big headlines. Tell us what your game of the week is for the upcoming slate.
So last week I picked the Washington Redskins to lose on the road against the Giants, and it was a thriller of a game. RG3, you know, did some great things, but you know
that was one of the best games of the year.
It was definitely, you know, candidate for game of the year so far. Hate to see that his defense couldn't come up you know big in the end and stop you know that last drive on the Giants. Victor Cruz catching the touchdown to go ahead. But Washington once again makes a place in my pick for game of the week. I have them playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Definitely should be a good game. Man, like I talked about the Pittsburgh Steelers, they have such a culture and attitude of winning. A lot of guys, a lot of veterans who have been there before, won games. And when they struggle, it's just so rare to see that team struggle with so much pride, you know, so much tradition of winning. You know, going against the Washington team, I think it's just getting it together. You know, Alfred Morris and RG3, the two leading rushers, you know, in the NFC so far. You know, they're doing great jobs just in terms of, you know, racking up yards, moving the ball on the ground. So I think that should be a pretty interesting matchup against a beat-up Pittsburgh defense. So I'm going to call an upset this week. I'm going to call, you know, Washington escaping with a victory this time, 24-20.
Wow, look at that. Another person on the RG3 bandwagon. But, yeah, they've been playing well. And the Pittsburgh, you know, the Steelers, they definitely have some issues with their defense. We'll see if RG3 can exploit it. It'll certainly be a fun game to watch. You know what? When I was looking through the games this week, it's not an especially exciting slate of games, but you look at, you know, all of a sudden there's all these teams. There's so much parity in the AFC. There's a lot of teams that could make the playoffs. You look at two surprise contenders, one because of last year and the other one because of how this year started. And they're both in the NFC South. That's right, I'm talking Colts Titans, but Asa, it's not what you think. Chris Johnson has really gotten on track, and I know a lot of people would say, you know what, he was playing the Bills last week. Everyone puts up big numbers against the Bills. That defense is not what it should be with all that talent. Tisk, tisk, Chan Gailey, but that's for another day. I think Tennessee's really putting it together, and ever since they've installed my boy, Matthew Hasselbeck, at quarterback, instead of the young gun, they've gone 2-1. They're at home. You know, I think Indianapolis has some potential. They're 3-3 on the year. Andrew Luck, you know, is having a great rookie season. But look for Tennessee to win this game. I think that their offense is starting to click. The offensive line is starting to gel. That was one of their biggest issues. And they're going to be able to move the ball against Indianapolis. I'm not saying that, you know, they have the greatest defense in the world themselves, but they do have a lot of weapons. Kendall Wright has been a good rookie wide receiver. Nate Washington had 1,000 yards last year. We all know about Kenny Britt's athletic ability. So the pieces are there. I think they need to put it together, and I think that they're going to come out with a victory. All of a sudden, sitting at 4-4 with playoff veteran Matt Hasselbeck ready to take them down the stretch and maybe fulfill some of Asa's wet dreams.
The moist.
One thing, we're having technical issues once again, but the game that Asa wanted to break down this week is one of the bigger matchups in the NFL. It's the Falcons and the Eagles. Of course, it's of obvious importance to us as Atlanta fans. But the Falcons are the last undefeated team in football, sitting at 6-0. And the Eagles are a team in transition, seemingly mid-year, sitting at 3-3. They've had some disappointing losses and dismissed Juan Castillo, Andy Reid's boy. He was not happy to do it. This is a make-or-break season for him and Michael Vick, and they're in a very competitive division. Typically, this matchup historically, you know, favors the Eagles, especially in the past few years. But the Falcons have a lot going for them. Carson, what do you expect to see from this matchup of the Birds of Prey?
You know, definitely always exciting matchup. Look for Dunter Robinson to be on either the receiving or the giving end on a couple of concussions. Always hard-hitting action going on in these games. You know, it should be a different environment.
Somebody's going to get a concussion.
Somebody will get concussed, I can tell you that. You know, Mike Vick playing at home, I think, adds a different element to the game. He's not you know, coming to Atlanta, playing his old team against, you know, in front of his old fans in the stadium he used to play in. But, you know, definitely look for our defense to step up. The Eagles' offense has a lot of talent, and on defense, it's going to be imperative, you know, that we keep McCoy bottled up. We can see what happens when Vic is forced to throw the ball 30, 40 times a game. You know, we can force him into some turnovers. And then on offense, I think protecting the passer is paramount this week. The Eagles use that Y9 system, something that we'll see once out of every year. So it's really important that we are up to task.
Let me ask you this: with a new defensive coordinator, you're a guy that played football at a high level. Do you think that, you know, with only a bye week, you know, as a new defensive coordinator, are you going to come in and try to put your stamp on things, or is there not enough time and you're pretty much going to be running the same thing with the same personnel?
You know, I do. You know, when I saw this move, I think that this move might have been premeditated. I think when you look at the schedule, Andy Reid might have thought, you know, if we get to a certain week and the job's not getting done, you know, we can bring someone else in, at least for the time being, and give us that bye week just to sort things out. But I think that just in terms of the defensive look, I don't think you'll see too many different looks from the Eagles. We'll definitely tweak some things up, maybe personnel. You know, you won't implement a new system in 1 week. I think that most, you know, for the most part, things will remain, you know, close to the same, just for the sake of having everyone on the same page. I think as you advance week by week, you know, more wrinkles we put in until the off season, we can fully implement the season. But when you only have a week to install an entire defense, I think that, you know, look for some wrinkles. But I think that for the most part, it'll be the same defense that the Eagles have run for the first, you know, 6-7 weeks of the season.
One thing that does make me feel good about this, you know, in the past years, the Falcons have played a bend but don't break defense. This year, there's been an emphasis on big plays. We have a big turnover margin. And, you know, it seems that lots of interceptions, lots of fumbles. I think Asante Samuel has kind of rubbed off on these guys, and now with Mike Nolan putting a little bit more pressure. I like for the Falcons to be able to get a few turnovers in this game, and I think if you can do that, you know, that's huge. I also like that the Falcons are so multidimensional on offense, especially if they run that wide nine. There's so much to watch out for, you know, whether it's a you know, some quick passes to Julio Jones and Roddy White, maybe Tony Gonzalez in the slot. And if you can, you know, loosen them up a little bit, that wide nine presents a great opportunity to be able to run the ball up the gut. They did get D'Amico Ryans, but with all those things in motion, you'd like to think that the multidimensional offense can do it. But again, I really think that this game, just as all the other Eagles games, is going to come down to turnovers. And I like that Atlanta has that trend of being able to turn the other team over.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, we touched on the emphasis that we have this year of being able to make plays and force teams into making bad decisions. I think that's going to come up big, especially Michael Vick and the amount of turnovers that he's had, especially in crucial areas on the field. So, you know, to put a number on this game, I think the Falcons will win in Philly, getting a crucial road game, and they'll win it 28-17.
I like it. I like it a lot. That's a big margin of victory. You know, Asa also picking the Falcons. I also will pick the Falcons.
Wow.
Mike Smith, 2 weeks to game plan, man, with these many weapons. You know, Mike Nolan getting that defense ready. And we're getting big Corey Peters off the DL. And yet another defensive tackle that's going to be wreaking some havoc on the Lions. So I don't know if I like it as big as you do. I think that, you know, with LeSean McCoy, we've had some trouble against the run. Andy Reid does like to throw, but, I think that's hard to deny. I'm going to say the Falcons win this game. Oh, boy. Let's put a number on it. 34-28.
Oh, wow. Shootout.
It's a shootout. It's a close game, but the Falcons pull it out. Ah.
You heard it here first, foul territory.
Heard it here first, foul territory. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us, foul territory, on blogtalkradio.com. We do this every Wednesday, and guys, I promise, if you can make it through the technical issues, the show is always the best.
Awesome.
Yeah, and, you know, we're going to try to cut down on those, but thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for finishing it out. Carson, anything you want to give a shout-out to before we sign off here?
Shout-out to the whole country of Venezuela. 7 players in the World Series. Definitely a source of pride for those Venezolanos.
And I'm going to give a shout-out to Halloween. I just realized Halloween is 1 week away, so there will probably be either a very spooky episode of Foul Territory coming to you next week, or you will have a very drunk host. So look forward to that. Let's see. Let's get some music to play us out. And thanks, everybody.
That's all, Bryce. I need no money.